We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, welcome back to Proof to Product. I'm your host, Katie Hunt. And today on the show, we have Christine Herron, the owner of Everyday Explorers Co. It's a line of clear stamps and journals that encourage people to document their lives in creative ways. Christine started her brand as a way to combine her love of graphic design and scrapbooking, realizing that her unique aesthetic and love for travel was easy to translate into scrapbooking and craft supplies. Christine is dedicated to learning. She attended our paper camp program and is also a member of our Proof to Product Labs program. And in 2016, she was chosen to participate in the Adobe Creative Residency program, where she worked on building her product-based business. Originally from the Philippines and with a background in publishing, Christine now lives in Berkeley, California with her husband. We covered a lot of ground in today's episode. Christine shares what it was like working in the Adobe Creative Residency Program. She goes into detail about the processes and systems that she has in her business and how she set up a production schedule for her monthly direct-to-consumer releases for her scrapbooking program. And she shares how she moved back to the Philippines for a year and kept business running in the United States through strong relationships with her manufacturers and outsourcing fulfillment to Fulfillment Warehouse. Now, before we get started, I wanted to share a note that I received from Erica Lockwell of Our Back Pockets. Erica joined Proof to Product Labs earlier this year, and here's what she has to say about the program. I am loving labs, the community, the resources, the learning. I really like the monthly focus and the workbooks you provide each month. Your coaching is superb, and the masterclasses have been phenomenal. I'm honestly blown away. I knew this would be a useful offering, but I don't think I realized just how robust, supportive, and educational it would be. Thank you so much, Erica, for this note. It made my day. Listeners, the doors to Proof to Product Labs are always open so that you can get the help you need when you need it most. Head to prooftoproduct.com/labs to learn more and join my 12-month group coaching program. Now let's dive into today's episode with Christine Herron of Everyday Explorers Co. Hey, Christine, welcome to Proof to Product. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've been very excited to talk to you because I have adored watching your business from afar and just seeing how you've implemented your own spin on like the rules of the industry, which I know we're going to get into later. But okay, let's start. In 2016, you were chosen to be a part of the Adobe Creative Residency Program, which I imagine is a pretty competitive thing, right?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
can you tell us about the program? How long was it? What types of things did you work on? Like, what? Tell us about it.
Yeah. Okay. So I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I had met some folks from Makeshift Society, which is okay. a small co-working space. And they were saying that Adobe was working on a creative residency program, which basically is Adobe sponsors creatives, like real world creatives, to work on a dream project of theirs for an entire year. Wow. We'll give them us a full salary and benefits to just work on that project and talk about it and share. So basically the goals of the whole project was like, here are real creatives doing actual things and Adobe's going to help them kind of get book either get started or kind of give them a bigger platform to do things. So yeah. And they were like, you know, you should apply. And I'm like, we'll see. Okay, sure. And
yeah.
At the time I was just starting my small business, which was scrapbooking stuff. I started with digital files for scrapbooking and all that. And I was like, ooh, what if I've always wanted to start a paper line. So it's like travel journals. And I was like, is this something that is even, you know, like, would Adobe even be interested
in
scrapbooking and journals and all that? So I decided to apply as like a graphic designer. And I told them, I felt like it was unique enough because, you know, living in San Francisco, everything is tech, everything is, let me show you my UI, UX skills. And I was like, I'm bringing something physical to the space, and I can talk to creatives about like starting their own physical like product lines. Long story short, they're like, the VPs at Adobe were like, this is cool. And I'm like, it is. Okay.
You're like, yes, I am. Cool.
Like, I'm glad you like the idea of a travel journal, a physical travel journal at that. Yeah. And so the program, it was a year. I think when I had started, we were the second group to ever go through the program. Okay. So even Adobe themselves were still kind of figuring out what the program would look like. So I'd say my whole year was a lot of going to conferences and both like learning, but also like talking about the program to other creatives. Because what they wanted to do is really inspire other creatives to say, by me sharing what I'm working on and my process. And like a lot of it was so, I think as a creative, you feel also that pressure of like, okay, now I'm giving this attention. Like, I better live up to it. I better show them that it was a good, you know, decision to pick me. But I think a lot of creatives were also inspired, like, here's a regular creative doing her thing, and that could be me too.
Yeah.
So that was really the whole goal. And even in the program, we were so different, all working on different things. Like, we had a YouTuber, we had an illustrator. So everyone was like doing their own thing and being supported by Adobe. So
I love this, because not only are you guys being supported by Adobe as you're starting out on these ventures of yours, but then you're also taking your experiences and skill sets and talents, and you're sharing them with not only your other peers in the program, but also Adobe. Like, I keep thinking about, like, I worked in the corporate world for a long time, you know, over 12 years, and it becomes pretty monotonous. I mean, I hate to say that, but like so to have this burst of energy from young entrepreneurs that are doing really cool things, that would be so motivating even to the corporate employees at Adobe, you know, that are seeing your development, and it just feels like a really great partnership. So your business was like kind of just starting before that whole experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I decided to make that the project that I was going to work on. I was like, I'm going to develop a line. I think in my proposal, I was like, a line of travel journals or paper goods to get people documenting their lives. So I was really into scrapbooking, but I mean, what one thing I was kind of feeling a little push and pull was like, I want to be in the scrapbooking world, but also I was living in San Francisco, and I'm like, it's so hard to explain this to people who don't scrapbook, or they have this idea of what scrapbooking is, like it's a generational thing. They're like, my mom scrapbooks. And at that time, I think I was like 30, pushing 30. Yeah. And I was like, no, you know, it can be something that everyone can do. Like, you know, it's not just what you think it is. And so I wanted to kind of relaunch that. And I really had this idea, like, I'm going to have a line of paper products. I'm going to sell them in all the cool like paper stores in San Francisco, but also like scrapbooking. So I was so torn between those two kind of, I guess, industries.
Well, and how did you reconcile that? Because now, okay, well, let's back up before we talk about reconciling that and like merging these passions of travel and scrapbooking. Mm-hmm. Your product line started with a physical travel journal, but now it's expanded to a lot more. So why don't you share with everyone what your product line looks like now? What types of products and how many SKUs do you have?
Okay, yeah. So my main products are clear stamps for scrapbooking. I have, oh my gosh, maybe like 50 SKUs already, because I launch every month. And so it just kind of piles on. Like every month it's like, oh, now I have 3 more SKUs.
Yeah.
And I'm also working on some stuff that kind of go around the whole, aside from stamps, I have journals, traveler's notebook size journals, and some stickers and washi tape to go with it. But the main product is really,
stamps. The stamps. Mm-hmm. I do want to go back to your launch like patterns and how you do that later in the show. Okay. But for right now, how did you kind of come to terms with like, okay, clear stamps are what I want to move into? How did you identify that that was the piece you wanted to leverage to merge your scrapbooking interests with your travel interests and the business needs?
You know? I actually got started like before Adobe, when I got started my business with both digitals and clear stamps. So clear stamps were like my entry into the scrapbooking world.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And I got started because Kelly Perky, who also runs her own brand and shop. She's a really well-known scrapbooker, also kind of on the younger side, and she has her own brand. I guess long story short, she got me to design some stuff for her. I met her at her workshop, and she was just so supportive, which I think is pretty rare in I guess any like business or industry when you find someone like starting out wanting to do something similar. Like yeah. she really encouraged me to get started. Like she even said, here's my snap manufacturer. Like you should go and make some of your own stuff. And that's really where I got started. Yeah. And it was like doing little things like that. I think stamps were easy to kind of latch onto just because people saw the value in it. Like stamps, you can use them over and over again. People are willing to pay for it. It's easy to just come up with designs in like this little 4x6 canvas without even thinking of color. You know, right. It's just like black and white. And so I think that I knew already, like, okay, the margins on stamps are pretty good. Like it was mm-hmm. easy to just keep doing the stamps because of all those reasons.
And you know my love of dive deeper into what is working yeah. and know your product. So the fact mm-hmm. that you have continued, like this is easy for you. You have the manufacturing locked in. You know the margins are good. Like
people want it.
It makes my heart. People want yeah. it. There's a demand for it. Like that makes my heart happy that you have just because I oftentimes see small business owners in this product space trying. They're anxious and excited to try other things. And so they yeah. spread themselves across multiple product categories either too quickly or before mm-hmm. they really refined one and you know, driven deep enough into a product category. So for me to hear you say this makes me really happy. And I think it's a very smart business model that you've embarked on. Let's go back real quick to your release schedules. Mm-hmm. I know direct-to-consumer is your main revenue stream.
Yep.
And you do new releases every single month. So
yeah.
how many SKUs, first of all, that's like amazing. But how many, okay. Do you release the products and then keep them in your shop forever? Or is it the kind of thing where it's a new release for a limited time and then it like pops up and then it goes away eventually after a few days?
So yes, I launch every month. I think a lot of that was also inspired by how scrapbooking kit clubs work, where it's always like a sneak peek of what's coming in a week. And then you launch the new products, people get excited, and then it kind of like dies down a little bit, and then it's time for the new stamps.
It's like, time to talk about something new.
Yeah, and then it's like, what's mm-hmm. next month's stamps? So that's kind of like the launch cycle that I go through.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I do keep the stamps on. So a lot of the stamps that I do aren't super seasonal.
Okay.
So they're not like, you know, like Halloween stamps. Like I rarely mm-hmm. do like super specific seasonal stuff. So a lot of it I keep on until I noticed that, okay, I think people are done with this design. And
yeah,
like this month, I just retired like maybe 5 SKUs, but those came out like 2 years ago.
That's where I was my line of questioning was heading that way too, because you already mentioned you released about 3 new SKUs a month. Mm-hmm. That does start to add up pretty quickly yeah. and you start to build a very large catalog of product. And one of the things, you know, I've talked about on the show in the past with other people, I did a solo episode on it, is the discontinuing part, because your line does start to feel either too large or bloated, or it goes in like a different direction so that it's not a clear, cohesive line anymore.
Yeah.
How do you manage discontinuing product when you're releasing so frequently?
Well, yeah, first I see like, you know, is the stock even still moving? Do people,
right,
you know, care? But actually, I wanted to say that just because you discontinue a SKU doesn't mean you can't bring it back again in the future. Yep. Because last year, I launched, I guess, these 2 stamps. So 2 different themes. One was, it was called Peace Out, which was just, and it was a stamp set that was like, I'm over this, I'm done. You know, it's all like those sentiments. Yeah. And another one that I launched was, I have a passport series. So it's like, Passport California, and then it's all like California stamps. And so this one, I was like, Passport Home. So all about home, you know, staying home, being home. And as you can imagine, when the pandemic hit, I was like, these 2 SKUs, which I am no longer making, totally make sense for right now. And so I brought them back and they did super well. And
that's awesome.
And it was almost like they were new stamps all over again, because I had so many new customers that weren't around, you know, a year ago. And they're
right.
They're cool. And I know as designers, it's so easy for us to get sick of our own work. And we're like, this is old. And people are like, this is not old because I just, you know, I just saw these now. And for us, it's like, I've been staring at this design the past year and a half. Like the fonts aren't even, you know, current anymore. But it's like, if it makes sense. Yeah. And so that kind of saved me from having to make something.
Yeah. Two new sets or rolling back two new sets that you had discontinued. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love your perspective on this because you're absolutely right. You can renew or refresh a SKU. You can just bring something back if it's timely and it fits. Do you ever take pieces of a stamp kit, like an asset from one of them, and use that in future stamp kits that you're developing? Yes,
all the time, all the time. Yeah. You can repurpose illustrations for stickers, for, I mean, even stamps. I do a lot of travel themed ones. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have a map icon. You can use that in so many different ways. And so when I design my stamps, so it's like I have them up on Illustrator, I have like old ones open too. Smart. So I'm like, what elements can I reuse? Because I mean, it becomes a new thing when you mix and match it anyway.
Oh, totally. And it's still your work. You're pulling from your own, you know, your own elements that you've created.
Yeah.
Very cool. This is helpful to hear. Well, let's talk about you moving. In 2019, you moved back to the Philippines, but you still managed to run your business here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So first off, I want to say congratulations because that is a very difficult, I mean, different time zones and
crazy. Yeah.
Like that's just a tough, logistically, that's a tough thing to do. But let's talk about what types of systems and processes did you need to put into place to make this feasible?
Mm. So I started getting those systems lined up, I guess, maybe 6 months before I knew I had to move. Well, all of my products are made in the US.
Okay.
So I knew that, okay, it'll be easy to kind of figure out the systems because they're all here.
Right.
And I'd say like 90% of my customers are all in the US anyway. Okay. And so I looked into a fulfillment center. Actually, I should say the good thing too is I have a good relationship with my manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for me to just email them and say like, hey, can you send this over to these people? Can you pack it in a certain way? These SKUs need to go to this person. These, you know, so
nice.
It was really,
that's huge. And I'm sure that took time to develop. I want to mention that to our listeners here that like that comes with time, that comes with knowing your product and the quality you're getting from the manufacturer and just having that open relationship with them. But I think that's amazing that you already had that foundational piece set before you decided to make this move.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, especially with the systems where it's like, you have to label it in a certain way. So the fulfillment center knows that it's mine. Like these are like super specific instructions that I feel like if you didn't have a relationship with your manufacturer, it'd be hard to kind of give that. So I went with a fulfillment center. I tried using ShipBob for a year and a half. And so, okay. I mean, I'm happy to chat about what the system looked like for
ShipBob. Yeah, let's talk about that. First of all, were they the only one you reached out to for quotes, or did you look at a lot of different fulfillment centers before you chose them?
I think they were the only ones who maybe got back to me. I think.
Oh, really?
So one, I was very nervous about picking a fulfillment center just because at that time I only had 50 orders a month. Okay. On average. And I'm like, I don't think anyone's going to, you know, want to get me. And at that time, ShipBob was, they were like, we do small businesses. And they were kind of like talking about their back end. They had a tech component where they're like, we will give you like a dashboard where you can like monitor all of your orders and all that.
Cool.
So I went with them.
Yeah.
And their pricing structure is pretty much like you pay per bin per SKU. So each SKU gets, depends on the size of your product. Mine is small. So you get one bin per SKU and you pay for the shipping. Let's see. You pay for the shipping per order. And they don't charge me for packaging or anything. Like it's all in. So for example, I have 50 SKUs and it depends on the price that they give you, I guess. So I think mine was like $5 per bin. Okay. So it's like 50 SKUs times $5. So you can imagine, I'm like, I don't need all these SKUs. Like, they're just sitting.
You're like, let me just get to do some. But okay, yeah. So just so I'm clear, the $5 yeah. per bin is a flat rate that you pay each month just yes. for the warehousing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's also the packing pulling fees and all
there's
that.
No picking or packing fees. So it's like, for example, I'm going to send you order something and ShipBob will charge me $5. $6 is the shipping fee. That's like an all in.
I see.
Mean, we probably know that postage is probably only like $3.50 out of the mm-hmm. $6 that they charge you. So
I see. So it's a flat yeah. rate per order for them to pack and pull everything. And you just know this is what it's going to cost. So it's,
yeah,
which is nice because a lot of the fulfillment houses have per piece, you know, fees. They yeah. have the picking fee, the storage fee, the shipping fee, like all mm-hmm. of the different things pieced out, which makes it difficult from your point of view, my point of view, the maker's point of view to calculate what the cost will truly be. And yeah. I was actually just talking about this with someone. We did a mini mastermind inside of our Proof to Product Labs program. Mm. And we were talking about, she's like, there's all these different fees. And I was telling her, I'm like, well, some of these I would put into the cost of doing business, not into your production costs, because they're more of the labor and the overhead mm-hmm. that you would have to have, even if you had somebody in-house packing and pulling and sell, you know, shipping these orders. So it can get very complicated very quickly. And so to hear that ShipBob was very like streamlined and worked with smaller businesses like yours. Oh,
cool. I'm like, well, I have to add too, there's also a fee whenever you send new product. So
okay.
they have like a receiving fee. That's like a flat rate of like 35, I think, per pack. Like, so I'm always like, can you put that all in one box? So they just charge me once. But I'd say like the problem with having that all in too is you don't know, there's no real breakdown of like, you don't know how much is going to shipping and how much is going to the picking and no control. Like, I think there was this one time that they had shipped and it gets crazy when it gets to international. Cause like they shipped like an international product to the Philippines of all places. I'm like, I know how
here.
Much. It, yeah. And it was like $80. And I was like, for a $20 like order, like, no, is there a way to, you know, so a lot of it, but I think the cool thing about ShipBob was you do have that dashboard and you do see like all the orders come in and you do see like tracking updated and all that. And so
that's cool.
That's a good thing. That's the good thing about fulfillment, but what you don't have control over is like the presentation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one reason why I decided to bring my shipping back in-house was I had been getting a lot of, I guess, complaints that, hey, you know, my stuff was looked really beat up or it just looked like it was just thrown in. And
which is not what you want, you know, that you don't want that representing your brand for sure.
Yeah. Especially as a small business, like if I'm only at that time, I was like, I'm only shipping out 50 orders. They might as well be like really good ones. Right.
Yeah.
It's not as if I'm shipping 1,000 per month. And so, yeah.
Okay, so you had fulfillment, that system in place so that while you were overseas for over a year, I think it was, you said, you had that working so the business could still go. Did you set up any other types of systems and processes for how you were working and like, you know, maybe the time of day you were working or any other types of internal systems?
Yeah, well, I had to set up a production schedule for myself, like knowing that if I sent the design files to my manufacturer, like it'll take them this long to get it to the fulfillment, and like fulfillment will need a week or so to kind of itemize everything. Yeah. And so a lot of it was working backwards.
Especially doing that monthly, that's like you're constantly
And launching the new products every month. So I'd launch at like 10 a.m. Pacific. And that's like almost 1 a.m. in Manila time. So I'm like, I just got to stay up and make sure that it goes up.
Everything works right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So, okay. Something just occurred to me too, because, you know, I launched in my own business and I know how much work goes into it in terms of the email marketing, the social media marketing, the pre-planning, the delivery of the products and services and all these things. If you're doing this on a monthly basis, you're not only having to produce new product for this monthly release, but you're also then having to do the strategy component behind it for the marketing and letting your customers know. So what is, I'm kind of shifting gears here a little bit away from the systems of working overseas, but what does that like sales release, like, what does that release cycle look like on the marketing side for you? Are you doing an email? Are you talking about it on social media? Do you have it systematized so that it's kind of a rinse and repeat with the new product?
Yeah, I do. So I'd say a lot of like the launch system is inspired by, you know, the scrapbooking world, scrapbooking monthly kit clubs that mm-hmm. and how they do it. I have a creative team of 10 scrapbookers that I give product to every month. And I tell them, you know, make stuff, please make stuff with this.
Yeah.
And
share your content with me, please.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, that's even more working backwards because that's adding a whole month to give them time to kind of work on the products. And so, yeah, I do have a system for that. So I, you know, work almost 2 to 3 months in advance. I have to give them time. I have a social media manager who helps me kind of slash creative team coordinator who kind of like, mm-hmm. hey guys, it's time to submit your projects and we can queue them all up. But yeah. I still do all my email newsletters. There's like a launch, a sneak peek. I think what makes it easy too is there's already kind of an unexpected system where it's like mm-hmm. the week before launch, I'm just going to start talking about the stamps that are coming, sharing sneak peeks to get people excited. And then it's launch time. But as you can imagine, I have to do all that and ship the actual orders.
Right. and the orders from previous months or general, like there's just a lot of moving parts in this. And I appreciate you sharing behind the scenes because I think you've done a really, really amazing job of creating these systems and processes, whether you're mm-hmm. overseas or whether you're here back here in the US. But like, this is something I've been working on a lot with my Proof of Product Mastermind clients of like, let's just create this robust system once that we can then rinse and repeat, whether it's marketing to wholesale, whether it's marketing to the retail audience, you know, let's have these types of assets that you know you need. Let's, you know, there's a creative work, there's the production work, there's all these other things you're doing. So if we can simplify things into, you know, these easy to manage systems, it will make your life so much easier, which is what you've done. So major kudos to you.
Thank you. It was easier said than done because I know as creatives, we're also like, I'm not inspired. I have no ideas right now, but my stamps, my new designs are due on Friday. Like, what do I do? And so there's always that too. But then you have to know that if you drop the ball now, like everything else, it's like dominoes. It's like, oh no, it's all going to get, you know, affected down the line. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you had previously shared with me that product makers shouldn't be afraid to innovate or push beyond, quote, industry standards. Can you tell me a little bit more about this and why you feel this way?
So with my stamps, I think this was also coming from what I was telling you earlier, how I felt like a little push and pull between like the scrapbooking world and the design world. But I mean, I was mm-hmm. living in San Francisco. It was all tech, design. They can get kind of snobby about their design, especially on like scrapbooking. And I had friends who were like, what now? You're doing what? So I felt so much like I had to keep those two separate. And so like even in my personal Instagram, I wouldn't really post as much about my scrapbooking stuff because, you know, I had all my design friends.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of, I guess, when I was, as I was designing products, a lot of it was like, well, how can I bring in my graphic design into this? That I don't, like, I saw the way that scrapbooking stuff were being made. So it's like, it's always, for example, these clear stamps are always usually like this. And so I was like, how can I play with my packaging to make it different? So I got inspiration from, I think, a stationery store in Berlin that I saw. They had like these little plastic vinyl sleeves. And I'm like, what if I just use these for my clear stamps? And so it was just a lot of what you see out in the world. And it's like, this is not the industry standard, but, you know, what if I bring this part into what I'm doing? And so, I mean, I think it's easy to think that, okay, I want to get into this industry. How are they doing all the things? I should be following suit. And I think that's also where I was in the beginning, where I was like, okay, I better start doing wholesale because that's the thing to do. And And Katie, I think I was actually talking to you about this. I was kind of stuck with doing wholesale just because I, in my mind, I had the ideal store, ideal client that was like, the fancy design stores in San Francisco, like Rare Device, like the really pretty like stationery places. And I'm like,
yeah,
they're not going to take clear stamps because it, you know, you take it, you need so much like explanation of how to use it. You need clear blocks and ink and all these things. And I think you had told me, well, you don't have to wholesale everything in your line. And I was like, that's true.
You know what, though? You are not alone in like that revelation, because I can't tell you how many people I talk to where it's like they've been struggling to figure out how to wholesale a specific product and they can't get the margins to work, or it takes too much of an explanation or educational curve, you know, or it's just, it feels like you're forcing a triangle block into a circle, you know, whole kind of thing. And so I just, for anyone listening out there, if your products aren't suited for a specific revenue stream, you don't have to offer them there. And, you know, maybe something's only offered to wholesale and not retail, or vice versa, you know, like there's options there. So I'm glad that was helpful for you to hear.
Well, it gave me permission to be like, okay, I'm not going to push this.
Good. Yeah. And you have this engine running. Your direct-to-consumer revenue stream is strong, and you've got the production in place. You've got the manufacturing in place. You've got the marketing dialed in. Like, I don't know. That's where I see, again, creatives that kind of get bored. They're like, this is old hat now. You know, I've done this. I'm kind of like, what else can I do? You know, because we're creative. We want to be doing new things all the time. But those that really see success are the ones that dive deep into something and, you know, make it as simplified and streamlined as possible, and you know, then build upon that and layer that in. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I agree. I think there are definitely times where we need to be following industry standards, or especially in the early days of our business when we don't know any better. Like, that's where you need to be following industry standards, because it'll make it easier for you to get moving faster. But as you get more experience as an entrepreneur, as you get more experience growing your product line, that's where you get to play and say, hey, this is actually going to represent my brand better. This is going to merchandise my product nicer. You know, that's where you can kind of loosen things up, in my opinion.
And I should say, like, do follow those industry standards in the beginning, because people need to be able to know what you are and what you're doing. Like, I guess in their minds, they have to put you in a box. It's like, okay, are you stationary? Are you this thing? Are you this thing? And I think once you've defined that and you've been consistent and they know kind of what your brand is and what, then you're right. Like, you can kind of push the boundaries a bit, and, you know, because I think, I mean, I went through so many different kinds of packaging, but I knew that I was talking to the scrapbookers, and I had that. And I think it was when I got clear and kind of leaned into the, okay, I'm just going to start talking to scrapbookers now. Cause I don't know if a lot of the brands that you work with experience this too, but I have like this conflict between the customer that my ideal customer, I feel like the customer I want to reach versus the customer already supporting me. And I'm like, they're cool. I want to reach those people. But these are the people who are actually supporting and love what I do already. So it's like, how can I make life better for them versus keep trying to teach this new ideal customer that I want that they should buy from me? So,
and it's a challenge, because of course you want to nurture the people that are your current customers and buying and supporting you, buying from you and supporting you, because that's going to build your business up more. It's tough talking to two audiences at the same time, whether that's different revenue streams, whether that's like your ideal customer that you eventually want to be working with, and those that, so it's a challenge for sure. But I think you're on the right path of nurturing both in different ways too. You know, what is next? I know you've got some really exciting things coming up for you and Everyday Explorers Co. Do you want to share some of that now with our listeners?
So I'm still working on my monthly releases, but I'm slowly starting to introduce more of the paper stuff, which has been my goal. Actually, one of my goals was to be part of NSS, and I was like, oh, I guess not. Or New York Now. Like,
they'll still have a stationery section within New York Now, but I know it's sad and bittersweet for sure.
So, I mean, that's in the horizon.
Very cool.
But I'm working on more paper stuff now. And I hope to launch my subscription kit type thing, which is still, it's still in the baby stages, like figuring
out. That's awesome.
Yeah. But by next year, I hope to get that up and running.
Very cool. Well, Christine, it's been so much fun talking to you. Let everyone know where they can find you online to shop your products or follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, thanks. This is really fun. I mean, I love talking about like business and systems, especially now because I got them figured out. I mean, if you talk to me like a year ago, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, but that's a great phase to talk to people too, because there's so many different options to do these things. So I can see the confidence in you compared to when, I mean, you were confident when I met you in paper camp too, but like there's a different vibe of like, no, I'm confident what I'm doing. I've got these things in place and now I'm working on the next thing. But again, tell everybody where they can check out your products.
Okay. So you can find me at everydayexplorers.co. That's my website. And I am on Instagram at everydayexplorersco.
Awesome. We will include those links in the show notes like we always do. And Christine, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing all this amazing background of how you've grown your business and the tools you've used. It's very helpful for all of us to learn from one another. And I appreciate your candor and sharing.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie.
Of course. This was such a fun and enlightening conversation with Christine. The specificity in which she talked about the fulfillment warehouse and also her monthly direct-to-consumer releases was awesome. You can find all of her links and even the resources we talked about in our show notes, so go there if you're looking for any of those links. And thank you again to Christine for joining me. I really enjoyed this conversation. Now, friends, if you want to connect with product-based business owners just like Christine or Christine herself, because she's in our community, and if you want to receive access to coaching sessions with me and masterclasses led by industry experts, be sure to check out our Proof to Product Labs program. It is a 12-month group coaching program built specifically for product-based business owners. This fall, we are going to be tackling Instagram marketing, preparing for the holiday sales season, and how to optimize your website to get more sales. So enroll at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thank you so much for listening today. I will be back soon with a new episode.